This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's a brand new week. It's Monday, October 14th, 2019. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the WBBM Noon Business Hour, where not only do we discuss money, we give you the chance to win some as well. Keyword for cash coming up in about 19 minutes. The Noon Business Hour presented by the Village of Bedford Park. There comes a time with an older car where you decide to sink more money into it or call it quits. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, the U.S.-China trade talks hit another key point. While the week ahead will include reports on retail sales and industrial production, plus the start of earnings season, we're joined now by Tom Hudson, the week ahead columnist with McClatchy Tribune News Services based in Miami. Tom, welcome back to the program. It sounds like China is really going to set the pace for this week on two fronts. One, this trade deal that was discussed, the framework for at least, was discussed on Friday afternoon, and then also the report of China's GDP.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Rob. China and trade is going to continue to consume a lot of the oxygen in the marketplace. And frankly, it will set the overall direction or the tenor of optimism or pessimism until we get to Tuesday and begin to see some bank earnings coming in. And then later on in the week, some transportation sector earnings. I think those could set the tone and could steal a little bit of the thunder away from China, assuming that the Chinese trade talks remain relatively quiet, and we don't hear anything necessarily from the Trump administration or from Beijing. But I do think that you're absolutely right. As the market kind of digests the optimism that was expressed by the president on Friday and the reality of the kind of the week after the fact, knowing full well the devil's in the details, lots of details here still to be worked out. Better to be still talking than not talking. But you don't have a deal until you have a deal.
On both sides, as long as these negotiations have been going on, we've heard numerous and analysts have said that both sides have leverage in this case. In the case of China, they can just simply wait out President Trump through November of 2020 because the leadership in China is going to be around in January of 2021. Donald Trump may not. He may be a private citizen then. Is it possible, though, that that the Chinese may have even more leverage now with the impeachment inquiry and then the criticism over what's happening in Turkey?
Well, perhaps, I suppose, on the surface, but we know this, that they're negotiating with the partner that they've been at the table with for the better part of 2 years. And while they have walked away from one another and there have been some testy times and there could be still some testy times ahead, there has been some progress made and they continue to talk. A new administration, should it come in January of 2021, you kind of have to start back at square one. At that point, you know, who knows who's got the leverage, because you're only going to have to see which way the winds are blowing with Congress as a big piece of this as well. I think the leverage right now is China announcing up to $50 billion of agriculture products, key for Midwestern farmers and soybean and corn sales, certainly. And you're seeing that reflective, at least in the bean markets today, Rob. I think the second thing, leverage for the Trump administration, is the still the threat of a mid-December 15% tariff hike on $160 billion of Chinese goods. So each side here still has quite a bit of a sword left, so to speak.
And on the other side, in China, their economy is continuing to slow down.
That's right.
Yeah, the GDP growing just 6.1% in the third quarter.
Yeah, that's right. And listen, I mean, United States would scream for that kind of activity, of course. But for China, yeah, slowing down from the level of 8-9% GDP growth, it feels like a screeching halt. And so for kind of social stabilization, economic stabilization, China certainly wants to get a hold of this and have its first or second most important market for exports to have some kind of settled economic conditions. But listen, we may be two or three phases still away from that.
And we will talk, we'll recap phase two, three, four, five, six as necessary.
Indeed.
Right here on the Noon Business Hour on WBBM. Tom Hudson, the Week Ahead columnist with McClatchy Tribune News Services based in Miami. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Coming up, picking the right time to cut bait with that older car.
Your best stock option. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
A big moment in owning a car is when you need to decide whether to pay for another repair or move on to a different vehicle. And in some cases, the decision is pretty obvious. Think back to the Victory Auto Wreckers commercial where the guy opens the door and the door falls off. Well, that's a clear sign that you should probably get a new car. But sometimes there's a little bit of a debate. And let's talk about finding that sweet spot with Jeff Gilbert, the automotive reporter for CBS News based in Detroit. Jeff, welcome back to the program. Sometimes it's obvious. You turn the key, the car doesn't start, and then you say to yourself, "Well, it's time to get a new one." But what are some other what are those gray areas you may encounter when you decide to get a new car?
Well, first, in my case, it's when I run out of duct tape. I mean, that's kind of an obvious sign right there. But seriously, I mean, it's a difficult decision, and it's difficult for everybody because a lot of people don't realize that new car prices have gone up so much that they're actually, you know, there are now twice as many used cars sold as there are new vehicles. So a lot of it is your own life. I mean, when you start putting more and more money into a vehicle, you may decide you're putting good money after bad. And the other question is, how long do you want to keep a vehicle? You know, they're today, vehicles last a lot longer than they used to, so a new vehicle can be an investment that you can easily hang on to for a dozen or more years. But if you like something new and want to keep rotating, that's when you start looking at a lease.
20 years ago, when I had a big repair bill for my Buick Roadmaster station wagon in college, I looked at the repair bill, then looked at the Kelley Blue Book value of the car and realized the repair bill exceeded the value of the car. Should you go by the Kelley Blue Book value when deciding if a repair is just simply not worth it?
Well, that's certainly helpful because all of that stuff is online. Kelley Blue Book has a very extensive site. So does Edmunds.com. But you also have to look at yourself. I mean, I'll talk about my life. I have a brother who's an excellent mechanic. He never buys a new car because he can keep them going and going and going. If you don't want to deal with that kind of thing, then you might want to get something new. So a lot of that is involved in your own life. And, you know, I'll tell you a story for myself. My very first car only lasted 6 years. That was back in the 70s. And I got rid of it because a mechanic told me that the frame had rusted through. These days, 6 years, you may not have even be done paying off that vehicle, and a six-year-old car today is almost like brand new.
Jeff Gilbert, CBS News automotive reporter based in Detroit, thank you for joining us this afternoon on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up, it's a surprising development in retail. Someone has built a new mall.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A new shopping mall project in Connecticut is coming at a time that many other malls are struggling to stay alive. Let's find out why the owners are taking the plunge from Jan Rogers Niffen, the CEO of J. Rogers Niffen Worldwide. Jan, welcome back to the program. In the midst of the retail apocalypse, this company is building a brand new shopping mall. Now, is this some kind of Colonial Williamsburg experience where people get to walk around and pretend it's the 1970s once again with Muzak in an AT&T store?
Yeah, it's none of that. But it is a more traditional mall than you might have thought. And I'm actually sitting in the lounge of the mall at the moment, staring out these gorgeous glass windows onto a patio. So they've done some things like that. But it's a Nordstrom's, it's a Bloomingdale's, it's every inline store like Abercrombie & Fitch and Chico's and Soma and all the ones you would expect to see in a mall. And it's putting in some beautiful restaurants instead of having a food court, which is, you know, what you would typically have in the old traditional mall. So there's some differences. But if you walk through it, you would say it's a really nice mall, but it's still kind of your traditional three-story anchor on each end, stores in the middle, nice restaurants kind of mall. And it was built by Brookfield, and they clearly believe it's going to work because it's in South Norwalk, Connecticut, which is the only mall really in South Connecticut, and the next nearest mall is White Plains, New York, and I think they just think that's a very affluent neighborhood. There's plenty of money here, and it just kind of lacks a shopping center. And I don't think there's another one being built in America that's a traditional shopping center at the moment.
So really,
I don't think there ever will be either.
Well, I mean, shopping centers, if you pull away all joking aside, it's still a gathering place for a lot of people. And you simply just have to, like anything else that's trying to make its way ahead in changing times and changing technology and changing tastes, you just have to do the best you can to reflect those changing tastes.
You have to make it more fun. For instance, in the Nordstrom store on the first floor, there's a whole place now for you to come in and pick up pre-ordered packages. And there's little tiny cubicles for changing rooms, so you can try them on if you don't want to take them home first and try them on. And so, you know, you don't see things like that in a traditional department store, but you see it here. And then in the center of the third floor, there's this gorgeous bar, and you can sit at the bar and eat or you can drink. And then there's a restaurant built around it. So it's just, you know, a nicer environment. But I laugh about it when I walk through it. I think, well, you know, it still kind of looks like a mall to me. It has higher ceilings and it's prettier, and the stores have done interesting things to be a little more experiential. But it's clearly a case of they think if you build it, they will come.
Well, we'll keep an eye on the progress of Shopping Mall 2.0 in Norwalk, Connecticut. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Jan Rogers Niffen, CEO of J. Rogers Niffen Worldwide, based in New York. Still ahead, there's a report Apple will release a $399 iPhone.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Apple reportedly plans to launch a new and more affordable iPhone in the first quarter of next year. It's Stock Picker Monday. We'll get a couple of investment suggestions from a money pro. A man from the Northwest Side is charged with murder in the shooting deaths of five neighbors. And Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Lindsey Graham says he'll meet with President Trump today to discuss sanctions against Turkey over its invasion into Syria. WBBM Business, the Dow is down 5 points now. The NASDAQ is down 6. The S&P 500 is down 3. AccuWeather says mostly sunny today with a cool breeze and a high of 52. Right now we have 49 degrees in Chicago. WBBM News Time, 12:31. And this portion of the Noon Business Hour presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are lower today. We're joined by Gary Kaltbaum, president of Kaltbaum Capital Management and a Fox Business News contributor based in Orlando. Gary, welcome back to the program. It appears on Friday, President Trump made this announcement about there is the possibility of a breakthrough on the trade talks with China. And now both sides or the markets are absorbing the details and they're just kind of digesting things and trying to ascertain the impact.
Yeah, I'm not sure there are much in the way of details, though. I'm like what they say, the show me state, Missouri. And so far, it's been 18 months of we are told great deals are coming and all we get is more conversation. So when something happens, I'll be thrilled. But as of right now, I just think it's still more talk. I think the most important part of the equation right now is our central bank is not only lowering rates, but is now going to spend $60 billion a month of funny money buying bonds. In other words, quantitative easing, and markets have loved that since 2009. And we'll see if they love it again.
When the contours of that trade deal with China came out on Friday, this sounded like the deal that was the so-called soybean solution, where there was an agreement about buying U.S. agricultural products, but some of the big things like intellectual property theft were still on the sidelines.
I think all the big things are still on the sidelines. We keep being told that we're getting there, we're close. But, you know, I've been on TV for 18 months discussing this, and it seems like, you know, they said this is round one or whatever. I think this is like round 14, if you ask me. So I'm hopeful, but all I know is we've been told the big game for a long time and still nothing yet. But, look, I'm hopeful, and hopefully something gets done.
Obviously, anything that really involves the Trump administration has a certain greatest showman quality to it. But if you take away all of the TV theatrics from the White House and observe the trade negotiations from a strictly economic standpoint, how does this really rank compared to previous negotiations over, say, NAFTA or TPP or other economic deals that were reached between the U.S. and multiple parties?
I don't say this sarcastically. It's just louder. NAFTA, when it got done, just got done over time. It wasn't tweeted out every 4 hours. There wasn't a lot of big talk about it, except when you got to very specific parts. And then out of, you know, the deal was done and we moved on. Now there's people think that NAFTA was horrible, that has to be fixed, and that's why they're doing the USMCA. I think it's more of just, you know, playing around with NAFTA. There's not many big changes. But again, I'm a big believer in free trade. I don't believe in tariffs. I know tariffs are a tax on business and consumer, and the quicker we get rid of them, the better. Free trade is what's made the globe what the globe is over time. Sure, there are bad players. I think China's a bad player. So if we can get them on the right side, it'd be a very good thing to happen.
Very quickly, I feel like Steve Martin in The Jerk when the new phone books are in, but it is earnings season, and if you want to run around and do a dance, go right ahead. But the banks are first up this earnings season, and what are some things we could learn about the economy based on the results they post later this week?
By the way, I love that movie.
it is a classic.
Oh, it really is. Nathan Johnson. The banks are different from everything else. The stocks, for the most part, the regional banks have been real dead money. The bigger banks a little bit better. I think there's a couple of issues. When interest rates are so low and margins are squeezed, it's just very tough for them. And trading volume also is down. So they really haven't been great stocks for quite a while. In fact, the big financial ETF is trading where it was back in October of 2017, and the regionals, you have to go back further. So I don't know if it tells you a lot about the economy. It tells you more about the interest rates and things like that. For me, the economy will be when I see earnings out of Caterpillar, FedEx, pretty poor numbers, 3M, then I want to see what's going on with these technology companies also. That'll tell me more. Banks I watch closely, but again, they've been pretty much in hibernation for quite a while right now.
Well, thank you for joining us this afternoon. Gary Kaltbaum, president of Kaltbaum Capital Management and Fox News business contributor based in Orlando. The website, GaryK.com.
News that makes you money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
A top analyst says Apple will launch a new, less expensive model of the iPhone in the first quarter of next year. Let's learn more from Mark Gurman, consumer technology reporter at Bloomberg in San Francisco. Mark, welcome to the program. First off, before we talk about the details of this less expensive iPhone, how less expensive are we talking here?
Yeah, and this is something we wrote about first a few months ago on Bloomberg, and this is a phone that would cost around $400, so that would put it about, I don't know, $300 less than the entry-level iPhone 11 right now, and about $600 less than the iPhone 11 Pro, and $700 less than the iPhone 11 Pro Max, so this would be quite a bit less expensive.
And this is called the iPhone SE 2. And what are some of the components that would be in this less expensive phone that might be cobbled together from, say, the 11 or the 10 or the 8?
Yeah, so it's unclear what this thing is actually going to be called. The iPhone SE 2 is what some, you know, fans online have taken to call it, given the last cheaper model from 2016 was called the iPhone SE. This would be an iPhone 8 externally, so it would have that 4.7-inch screen, look a lot like the 8, but the components inside would be upgraded from the A10 chip or A11 chip at the time, and that would be replaced with the A13 chip that's in the iPhones currently, which is quite a bit snappier and has better compatibility with the latest software.
How proprietary, when it comes to versions of the iPhone, is the camera technology? Because you're dealing with a much crisper picture from the iPhone 11 versus some previous versions. Will that be part of the cheaper phone as well?
Yeah, a lot of it comes down to the mix between the software they're putting in these newer models mixed with the different lenses and higher-end components they're using. This new iPhone, as you call it, the SE2, won't have the same triple camera or dual camera system as these newer higher-end phones. That's because these lenses are some of the most expensive components in the phones themselves. What this will have is a single lens on the back, and it'll be a camera similar to the XR from last year. And the way they're able to get these costs so down is because as you produce them for a long time, they rise in volume, which brings down the cost, of course.
Has Apple also discovered that maybe the high cost of the new iPhones are pushing a not insubstantial portion of the cell phone market into the open arms of Samsung and Google?
I don't think it's deterring anyone, because at this point, Samsung and Google are pretty much priced matched with Apple at the high end. The problem is that Apple doesn't have a newly spec'd device at the low end, as Google and Samsung do. But Samsung's already approaching $2,000 for their highest end model, which is quite a bit higher than Apple. And Google's pretty much in the same range as Apple, coming in between the pricing of the 11 and the 11 Pro.
And then very quickly, how has the 11 been doing in terms of sales?
The 11 has been doing great from everything we're seeing here, partly because of that price cut you mentioned, going from $750 to $700, moving from the 10R to the 11.
And then, lastly, the iPhone unveiling is not nearly as much of an event as it used to be, but it sounds like people did line up virtually, if not physically.
Yeah, you know, actually, to be telling you, Rob, I've been seeing a lot of lines even to, you know, this past weekend, which is not something I've seen a month after an iPhone launch happened, at least since the iPhone 6 5 years ago. So this is a sea change. I don't know if it's because of higher demand or because Apple is pushing lines again in stores. There was a period of time where they were really pushing people to buy online and not come in. But this is definitely back with the old for Apple, and that's definitely a good thing for them.
Well, thank you for joining us this afternoon, Mark Gurman, Consumer Technology reporter with Bloomberg, based in San Francisco. Join us at this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday, and still to come, our Monday Stock Picker.
Buy, sell, listen. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Stock Picker Monday, and lending his expertise this afternoon is Tim Griske, Chief Investment Strategist at the Inverness Council, based in New York. Tim, welcome back to the program. Let's start with the first of your two selections this Monday afternoon. And the first one is, it's a little bit of a startup, an unknown name in the retail space. And by that, we're talking about Walmart.
I'm not sure it's a startup, Rob, I will say something about both of these names. They are somewhat defensive. They're not all that economically sensitive, and we think the portfolio should have some exposure to non-economically sensitive sectors, especially at this point in the economic cycle. So Walmart obviously is undergoing an evolution here. They made a huge acquisition in India in their business line, retail and e-commerce, and that is going to be, we think, a big driver over the long term. Domestically and elsewhere in the developed world, e-commerce is becoming a bigger part of this company. Everyday low prices for online orders, and giving you also the option of in-store pickup as opposed to delivery. So this is never going to be an Amazon, but we think they can be a close second to Amazon in that online delivery space. So we love this company long term.
The symbol WMT for Walmart. And then your next one is in the medical field.
Right, and this probably isn't a well-known name, Teleflex, TFX. It's more of a large mid-cap company. They make single-use medical devices, not high technology, really more low-tech instruments. It's a razor blade type business, and by that I mean they produce tools that need to be regularly replaced. So things like catheters and in surgery clips, retractors, or closure devices like staples. One of their really exciting new products is called UroLift, and that is for enlarged prostates. It's a very low-tech, minimally invasive process to solve that enlarged prostate issue that inflicts many people throughout the country.
And this seems like a play that is centered directly on our aging population.
It is. It's really a great place, and obviously, again, not economically sensitive, very steady business. Might make a good acquisition someday for one of the larger players.
So, Tim, your two selections this week are Walmart WMT and Teleflex TFX. Tim Griske, Chief Investment Strategist with the Inverness Council based in New York. Thanks for joining us this afternoon on Stock Picker Monday. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we'll have the replay podcast available shortly at WBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.